This podcast is rated S for science and also for spoilers and swearing. There's going to be swearing.
Something is killing these people and sucking them dry.
Run! It's a stampede!
Hey, kid, what's eating you?
I don't want to talk about it.
He looks blue.
I'd say brownish gold.
No. I mean, he's depressed.
Welcome, everybody, to another episode of Cinematic Animalia, the podcast where we break down the biology of movie monsters. Today, we are looking at 1994's The Lion King. No description needed. We'll go over some news first. Yeah, you would think that that even Zoomers would have said... Oh, yeah, well, I mean, we're doing the original. For those of you, the 2019's The Lion King was actually based off an earlier film. we'll tell you a bit about the movie, our thoughts, then get stuck into the science that this movie brings up, including a fantastic interview with conservation biologist and lion specialist Maria Gutter. And then Libby will talk about the difference between a ripoff and an homage in light of some of the comparisons that have been drawn between this movie and Kimba, the White Lion. As always, the show is broken up into a few different segments. There's time codes below. You can skip ahead to the bits you're looking for. But before we get into that, my name's Sam Perrin. I'm a freshwater / invasive ecologist and climate data analyst based up in Trondheim, Norway. I also run the website Ecology for the Masses alongside co-host. Now, his name is normally Adam Harsick, but since we're doing The Lion King, we need a somewhat queer, dark-haired villain named after his one distinguishing feature. So today, Adam will just be known as Butt. Butt is a parasite Dr. Butt is a parasite / disease ecologist en route to the Bajarian University of the Negev. Alongside Adam is the Baroness, her lady. Oh no, hang on. You wanted a poor. Do you mean like a poor English accent, as in like a bad English accent, or a poor person's English accent?
Whichever
one you can do. But yeah, I was more referring to like the Downton Abbey servant kind of accent.
Oh, right. Okay, well, hang on then.
The upstairs and downstairs.
Her ladyship, downstairs. Libby Young, our story specialist and writer at Short Story Soup.
Dave is not here. He's off on a research trip trying to find that long-missing evidence that beavers can, in fact, catapult through the air at you like the Beast of Carbonog.
So he's never coming back.
he's never
Rest
coming
in peace,
back.
Dave.
Yeah. Now, I've got to be honest, this last week I have had every single song from the Little Shop of Horrors still stuck in my head.
I follow Sam on Spotify, so I've been able to watch his listening habits. I've been seeing Dentist, Mean Green Mother Fire Space, Feed Me, /, Get It.
Back to Dentist.
Yeah. Don't feed the plants. Oh my god, I love that song so much. And I have actually, I YouTubed Ellen Green's normal voice, and my god, I get why it was a choice. But having heard her normal voice now, I hate the voice she chose for this even more.
Even more?
Yeah.
She had like a deeper voice or a higher voice?
I don't know. It's a really beautiful, melodious singing voice. And it's just corrupted by this Audrey character.
She does what she can.
Yeah. And good for... And to anybody who just keeps up one character for so long. I mean, we make jokes about Daniel Craig doing Bond and how miserable he is every now and then. But playing the same character night after night, even if it's off-Broadway, like... Just that must really take it out of you.
You said some definitive things about whether or not you would continue
and I didn't. You know, I got asked 2 days after I'd finished an 8-month shoot whether I'd like to do another one, and I gave a fairly blunt answer.
Graphic answer.
Yeah, yes. I mean.
Now, news. Adam, Libby, you had some news of varying positivity.
I call the good news. So,
okay.
So scientists are saying that the tuna have recovered from the brink of extinction, and if we can kind of keep up these habits and regulations in place, they might recover as a species.
Nice. Yeah, they're saying that the implementations of fishing that they've made over the past 2 years has shown to be actually beneficial. So,
and there's been some really cool programs with like small-scale fisheries going on around the world as well, like designated marine protected areas nearby to fishing zones that kind of allows populations to recover. Because, I mean, as much as it sucks, the world's population is growing, and we are going to need, you know, aquaculture and fishing as an ongoing food source. So we have to figure out a way to manage these populations quick.
And while one species thrives,
regarding that point, the population grows. Yeah.
The Komodo dragons are officially on the extinction list, the endangered species list.
Yeah.
Tomato, tomato.
Yeah.
Due to habitat loss from climate change. So.
Yeah. Island species are going to have a really... I mean, island species already go through a rough time with isolated populations. They've been looking at, for some species, introducing, for instance, the Tasmanian devil, which has been threatened by facial tumours. They were looking at introducing it to mainland Australia. I don't know. I think some Indonesians might have issues with Komodo dragons being brought onto the mainland.
Yeah.
That's a scary premise.
Most people that don't live on the island of Komodo, where the Komodo dragons are from, would have issues with these massive, dangerous, venomous lizards coming to town.
Yeah.
The Tasmanian devil's liable to get you. He's a mean, vicious, nasty, no good, baggy-eyed, marble-headed ignoramus. He's a stupid,
flattery will get you nowhere.
Yes, so today we are doing Lion King, as Sam said. And for those of you who live under a enormous rock and don't know what this movie is about, yes, this movie is about a lion pride that lives in Africa. And they give birth to the next heir called Simba.
Simba
grows up somewhat. And his menacing Uncle Scar is plotting to take his place for the throne. So he has his father killed. A very dramatic, tearful scene that made every child weep.
Not me.
and exiles him, banishes him to the far reaches of wherever the hell they are. I don't know.
Sub-Saharan Africa.
Yes.
I do have to say, though, that I didn't cry that, not because it's not a worthy scene. I just didn't cry for the first time in a movie until Pokemon the movie in the year 2000.
Well,
when all the other Pokemon are crying, because I'm such a sympathetic and empathetic person. Full of emotion and care.
So Simba comes back with a vengeance and a warthog and a meerkat. And dethrones Scar, who has turned his once lush kingdom into a barren wasteland with his pack of hyena goons.
It's
so
basically Hamlet with animals. So, did anybody like anything about this movie?
You know, this classic, beloved movie.
Yeah.
It's pretty good.
Yeah.
You know, it's pretty good.
I love everything about this movie. Just the songs are great. It's hard with some of these movies, though. I don't know if I'm just really liking them or if that veil of nostalgia is so heavy that I'm so into it. But yeah, I love all the songs, especially Hakuna Matata. Timon and Pumbaa, they're my favorite part of the movie. I watched their like standalone TV shows when I was younger.
They were really fun.
Yeah, I used to get like Lion King magazines that they had down at the local newsagents. Yeah, they had these little like fun Lion King magazines with all these different puzzles and like the adventures of like little stories that were spread like a comic book that was spread out over every month. I used to, you know, go down to the newsagents and always be waiting for them, and the newsagent like knew me and my sister and he was like, "Sorry, we don't have it ready for you this month yet. It'll be here in a week or so." I'm like, oh man, it's just like, I can't do anything about it. Yeah, I love this movie. Yeah.
And because this was Australia in the 90s, this was 4 months after these came out in the States.
Exactly, yeah. We would actually have like the date on there as well, so we knew how badly we were getting screwed over.
I have a memory of seeing this movie, actually. I was 6 years old, and it was this local podunk theater. And they had brought, this is a really sad story now that I'm an adult, but as a kid, it was awesome. So they had brought, we have this safari, I'm going to use air quotes here, zoo in our area that does drive-through like tours where you can see the animals. But they're one of those zoos that are like very questionable and you can like pet the animals and hold baby lion cubs.
Think Tiger King.
Yeah, it's not great. But as a kid, it was awesome because they actually brought two lion cubs to the theater in the lobby. So they had, I just remember them being in this like kid playpen and you could walk
so
up.
Sad.
It is, but as a kid, it was magical because I could hold these lion cubs and then I went in and I saw Lion King and it was just like, obviously very, you know, cemented in my memory because of that experience. And now that I'm an adult, I can just look back and horror.
Yeah.
At this fond memory.
So yep. That's what Libby liked about it.
Yeah.
Animal cruelty.
Animal cruelty.
But yes, this movie is awesome because of the songs. The voice acting is fun. Just everybody in that movie is fantastic.
Everybody?
Who are you?
Oh, we'll get into it in what I didn't like right
now. I was like, who are you in? Yeah. Well, their voice acting is fantastic.
The acting. The quality of the acting. The yes. actors.
Fair enough. So
yeah, yeah.
Like everyone else said, this is just a fantastic movie that I really enjoyed. The gotta love an ambiguously gay villain, which every Disney movie needs to have to be successful. And this one definitely has it, if not one of, if not the best.
Yeah.
Great animation, great music, fun story. Timon and Pumbaa, best side characters ever. I remember that it was a movie I hadn't really seen until right before I was about to start graduate school. And we had some movies at the house for like a Christmas with the family. We watched Lion King 1.5, which is the story of Lion King from Timon and Pumbaa's side.
Yes.
One of the funniest movies I've ever seen. We laughed out loud so many times. It's insane.
In terms of things I didn't like, as I alluded to before, I think Matthew Broderick as adult Simba is incredibly irritating to listen to. I know this is the second week in a row where I've picked on one of the main actor's voices, but my God, I just... And as far as other things, which were a little unfortunate, when Mufasa died in this movie, my son Eric, we were all watching it together, he came and sat on my lap and he was just like, you know, giving me a hug, and it was like, aw. Mufasa's died, you know, he's giving his dad a hug because someone's dad dying on screen, and then Eric just let rip with his massive fart on the lap. I'm just like, get the fuck off.
And that's when Sam became a father of no one.
Yeah.
Did you banish him to the wastelands?
Should've.
Yeah, the wastelands.
Go eat grubs with your gay uncles.
The only thing I didn't like about this movie is the underappreciation that Sarabi gets. She was one of my favorites as a kid. She's a badass.
You know, I can't really pick a thing that I don't really like about it. It's one of those movies that watching it as an adult definitely isn't the same, so I don't appreciate it the same way, but nothing's really standing out to me as a major flaw beyond, I think I will agree with Sam, Matthew Broderick's voice is not the most pleasant to listen to for this big, you know, charismatic leader lion.
Yes.
A poor, poor second to James Earl Jones as Mufasa.
Yeah. And Jeremy Irons as Scar, yeah.
Oh my God, Jeremy Irons is Scar.
God, I just love it when a villainous, you know, the villainous actor is just chomping the scenery as hard as Jeremy Irons is. Just wrapping his lips around every single syllable. It's beautiful to listen to.
Not quite a cackling lunatic, but he's close. And I love it.
Yeah.
In terms of trivia, most of the characters have names that mean something in one language or another, primarily in Swahili, except for Scar, who is just flat out Scar. Yeah.
Well, he has a key Swahili name, I believe. They just don't bring it up in the movie.
Oh, okay.
I don't know if that was a retcon of what his name is supposed to be, but he has an actual name that basically means like refuse or trash. Like, it's a very shitty name. Like, you know, Mufasa is like great king, wonderful leader, whatever that is.
I'm just a piece of shit.
But yeah, basically like trash. I mean, so Scar's name in Kiswahili is Taka, which means waste or desire.
Yeah.
Taka Taka is garbage.
These are my sons. I will name you King. I will name you Waste.
Yeah. To cut a long story short, there was a point at last year when we started going into lockdown where I found learning Swahili incredibly useful. And then 2 months later, we found out that it was not useful at all, but I'd already put into 2 months worth on Duolingo, so I just kept going with it, right? Now, anybody who's taken a Duolingo course will know that it doesn't... me, Adam, we've both done it before. Saying you speak Swahili after doing a Duolingo course is saying you can swim after having, I don't know, splashed around in a bathtub once.
Yeah.
After having looked at the ocean from a distance.
Especially because I've looked at the Kiswahili Duolingo and it's really bad.
Yeah. And also, like, the translations into English make no sense whatsoever.
Mm-hmm.
So I keep having to go on, like, Google Translate stuff to make sure it's actually correct. And it's a pain in the ass. But anyway, I sat down. I was like, you know what? I'm going to put it to the test. So I got the lyrics from the opening song, right? And I sat there for like, I don't know, 20 minutes trying to, you know, translate this. And I was like, this is bullshit. Why isn't it working? And I looked it up and the song's in Zulu instead.
Yep.
Yeah, it's not Kiswahili at all. It's in fucking Zulu, and I'm just sitting there like an asshole thinking, right, I can do this. I'm the most cultured man in the world. And then,
speaking of Zulu, trivia, that is the only Disney movie that has been dubbed or subbed into Zulu.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
That's really cool.
Yeah. Makes sense. Do we have any other trivia at this point?
The only bit of trivia I have left is that this movie was the highest grossing animated film of all time until Finding Nemo.
Well, it held on to it for 10 years. Not bad.
And I have one more piece of trivia as well. The voice of Ed, the cackling idiot hyena, voice of Winnie the Pooh.
Man, that lousy Mufasa, I won't be able to sit for a week. It's not funny, Ed.
Before we start looking at the science, if you've got any thoughts or questions, you can find Dr. Butt and I on Twitter. I am at Big Dr. Fishboy. Dr. Butt is at Harsic Adam. If you want to get in touch with the podcast, you can visit our website, cinematicaanimalia.com, or email us at cinematica.animalia@gmail.com. You can also chat or game with us on Discord. Just type in cinematicaanimalia and you'll find us. If you want to read Libby's work, you can visit shortstorysoup.substack.com and sign up for fortnightly emails of new stories. If you want to find today's guest on Twitter, who we'll introduce shortly, you can find Maria at @m_gatta, G-A-T-T-A. And if you want to hear about some of the more hardcore science that Adam and I write about, you can check out ecologyforthemasses.com. So what we're going to cut to now is an interview I did with, like I said, conservation biologist and lion specialist Maria Gatta yesterday. And we will see you back here in 20 minutes.
Oh, I just can't wait to be
I am joined now by Maria Gatta, who is a conservation biologist, who's been studying conservation biology in three different continents, and most recently focused on the interactions between carnivores and humans, specifically lion and cattle. Maria's also consulted for a few different RPGs and video games on the biology therein. Thank you for joining us today, Maria.
Yeah, no worries.
Now, let me know if I've missed out anything, but you have studied in Spain, Australia, South Africa, the Netherlands, and Kenya, right?
Yeah, well, Spain, that's where I'm from, so okay. I did my high school in there, but I've actually not done any biology in there. I went to do my bachelor's to Australia,
mm-hmm.
and then from there I went to work to South Africa. Get a bit more of field experience. I really liked it. I really liked research. So then I went to the Netherlands, correct? Okay. During my stay in the Netherlands, I went to Kenya as part of my master's. And after that, I've been in a few places, including Germany and India.
Really? Okay, so four different continents then.
Yeah.
Europe, Asia, Africa, Australia.
Only the Americas are left.
And Antarctica.
That is true. I did apply for a job to Antarctica once, but I was not selected.
What's it like? You studied lions in Kenya, right? What's it like being out in the field? Just no connect, no electricity, no Wi-Fi or anything like that?
Actually, it was the complete opposite. So while I was in South Africa, we were very much no TV, no connection to internet unless you climbed up to a mountain, mm-hmm. the one place that had internet. But in Kenya, I was actually studying lions in Nairobi National Park. Okay. So, Nairobi, the capital of Kenya, actually has a national park with lions on it. So, if I had running water, I had phone connection, I had, you know, I could go to the mall and do shopping. It was very much the contrary to what one usually expects while out and about studying lions.
Okay. And was studying a massive charismatic predator like the lion as kind of... as interesting as you expected? Whether, you know, was it straight out of a David Attenborough documentary or...
Sure.
Yeah.
Like, you know, lions still sleep a lot of the time, but I don't care. I think it really depends on your personal view on animals and what are you interested on. But for me, finding those animals and just being able to observe them sleeping, and even when they're sleeping, you know, they get up, they sniff each other, or they take a walk and pee somewhere. Even that is just very interesting to me.
Yeah. Okay.
So, yeah, it was definitely all that I expected.
Cool.
Maybe because I also knew that lions were not going to do a lot.
Okay. So you were aware they were rather lazy creatures before beforehand?
I was.
Okay. Well, on to the film then. Very much not lazy lions in this film, depicted as being very active. But we are talking about The Lion King. What did you like about the film?
Everything. It was the first film I ever watched on cinema.
Okay.
When I was a kid, and you know, I've watched it a few times since, and yeah, I don't know. Like, even now that I'm a biologist and I know that a bunch of the stuff in the film is inaccurate or incorrect. Mm. I really enjoyed it. You know, it's fun. It's a children's movie. You can overanalyze it like we're going to do, but yeah. It's fun.
Yeah. We always ask this as well. Is there anything you didn't like about this film, going back and watching it again?
No. As I said, I'm pretty laid back, you know. It's a children's movie, so... Yeah.
Do you have a favorite song?
I don't think so. I really like the one where Simba is in the young stage when he's with Timon and Pumbaa. And, you know, they're having fun. They're, like, in, like, the water. And, like, there's, like, that crazy plumage or, like, leaves around the lion. Just because it's a fun thing.
Yeah.
The hyena one is also really fun. With, like, the... What's it called in English? The...
Be prepared?
I don't know. I don't know the names of the songs. Also, you have to take into account, I watched this movie in Spanish.
Ah, okay.
I'm originally from Spain. Movies are not dubbed, particularly movies for children, but also not movies for adults.
Yeah.
So everything is very different. Like, you know, the voices are different. The songs are different. I've watched it once in English and I cringed.
Yeah. Watched it yesterday in English for the first time. Yesterday in English, and my wife and kid, they had never watched it in English before. They'd only ever seen it in Norwegian. So they were very surprised by some of the choices as well. Yeah.
Yep.
Okay, so what's your general opinion on the depictions of lions in this film?
Very idealized. And I don't know to what extent, given my age... that was already present in the general perception of people and lions, or whether the Lion King heavily influenced how people saw them. But, you know, very much noble animals, the king of the jungle, even though they don't live in jungles. So very much an idealized and anthropomorphized. How do you say that word?
Anthropomorphized. Anthropomorphized, yeah.
Yeah, well... Very much a depiction of lions as idealized creatures rather than the reality, which is, you know, just animals who eat other animals, which the film really shies about.
Yeah, they really do lean into that whole thing of, yes, we eat the antelope, but we're doing them a favor, really, because we're going to die.
Yeah, it's a circle of life.
Yeah.
And you can actually rationalize it, because... If lions were to disappear, if hyenas were to disappear, eventually that would negatively influence the herbivores, but not in the way that is depicted in the Lion King.
No, yeah. One of the things I really want to talk about was this concept of Simba succeeding his father as the king of Pride Rock, right? Because it's not really how lions' succession works, right?
Usually not at all. So... Usually males between the age of 2 to 4 years old will be kicked out. Even if the father is still in the pride himself, he will kick them out.
Yeah.
Because the young male teenage lions start to get too rowdy, hormones are working, and the father does not want to have that sort of problems and eventually competition in his own pride. So they kick them out. They hang out for a while. They usually join in groups. So if the male lion is lucky enough to have brothers or siblings of the same age and sex, the group of males will join. But also, even if it's a single male lion, they will eventually join with other males, hopefully spend a few hard years hunting and surviving on their own until they eventually become strong enough to overtake another pride. And usually that will not be their native pride or their natal pride.
Okay. So Simba probably had another year in that pride before he would have gotten kicked out.
Yeah, Simba was way too young to be kicked out. Yep. At least a year, probably like two or three, honestly. And then solitary period for sure. And then potentially eventually finding his own pride, not a pride with his mom and cousin or half-sister.
Yeah, because it would be quite hard to avoid inbreeding in that situation, right?
Yeah. And, you know, it may happen in very specific circumstances, but I think in the wild, that's not the sort of thing that you see. Yeah.
Okay, but Scar and Mufasa being in the same pride, like, that's potentially a situation where they've been kicked out of another pride and they've made their way to Pride Rock after a couple of hard years and taken over together?
Yeah, for sure. It wouldn't explain why they are at odds with each other.
Yeah.
Male lions that form a coalition are actually pretty cozy to each other, particularly in small coalitions, like groups of two. There's far larger male coalitions, like six male lions at the same time. And in those, there's a bit more of dynamics happening, and definitely one or two of the lions are getting most of the matings. But I saw it myself when I was doing research. Male lions that are in a coalition spend far more time together with each other than they do with the females or the cubs. Like, they just go hang out by themselves. Like, they take naps together, they're in different parts of their territory. So them being together in the pride, yes. Them being at odds with each other, that'd be weird.
Okay. So you'd think that would have been much closer. Like, they...
Okay. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. That is interesting, though. So do you think that there would have been this huge also... Is there normally a massive power disparity if you've got two or three male lions? Would the one on the top be getting so much that it could, you know, make Scar jealous in this situation?
Usually not. As I said, usually, particularly with small lion coalitions, matings are pretty even.
Okay.
It's only when coalitions get really big that it's just a couple of lions getting most of the mating. And let's be honest, that's most of the things that male lions care about, mating and food.
Yep.
So, okay. In a coalition of two, they'd be pretty happy.
Okay. Now, in this... Let's fictionalize the world a bit further, but not too much, and say that Scar does get annoyed and take over and Mufasa dies. What would... how would dynamics actually shift? What would really kind of happen in that situation?
So, as per the females, if there starts to be a fight for the pride, lionesses do sometimes intervene in the fight, and sometimes they do not. So there's the chance that Ravi would have tried to maybe help Mufasa or, you know, thwart Scar's plans if she did want to retain Mufasa, which, you know, if we know something about Ravi and Mufasa, she did.
Yeah.
as per Simba, he was quite young, so rather than him, you know, being cast out or running away, being told by Mufasa to run away, he would have likely killed him if he could.
Okay.
There's also the chance that, you know, female lions sometimes try to avoid that, but a lot of the times there's not much to do.
Okay. So the hunting down and the death of Simba was fairly realistic. Oh, well, sorry, the attempted murder of Simba.
Yeah, setting off a stampede, I'm not sure, but definitely lions, as do many, many other animals in the animal kingdom, do commit infanticide.
Yeah, okay. What do you think, from The Lion King, what do you think of the depiction of hyenas in this film? Because they are referred to as slobbering, mangy, stupid poachers. Do you think that's fair?
No, not at all. It's very, very unfair, and it's imprinted into a lot of people's minds that hyenas are these mean, ugly creatures when they're nothing but. I've seen them in real life. They're intelligent. They're amazing. And they're really beautiful, too. So, personal anecdote, when I was doing field work, my mom came over to visit me in South Africa, and we went to a national park. And we saw hyenas. It was beautiful. The hyena was... It was a hyena mother with pups suckling. And the sighting was just for us. There were no other tourists. And we just stopped there. And that was the first time my mom had ever seen a hyena. And she was initially not well predisposed to it. She was like, oh, it's a hyena. But after a minute of just looking, that scene of complete calm and the hyena being itself, you know, not a caricature depiction, but just this mother with her pups, she was like completely smitten. And she would not call it beautiful, but she was definitely like, okay, it was a lot better than I expected.
Okay.
And we saw them many times after, and like my mom definitely warmed up a lot. So I think if you see them in real life, chances are that you're going to see that they're very intelligent, very interesting creatures.
Do you have any other thoughts about the depictions of lions or any biological inaccuracies in the film?
I think the thing that most people have issues with is, you know, Scar and Mufasa or Simba coming back to his natural pride. But for me, the main one is them being the kings of the territory. Yeah. And this in two ways. A, the herbivores being all happy that a new lion is born. That's a bit weird. Their food. And the second one that is a bit weird is that in reality, lions actually share a lot of their space with other large carnivores. So in the same area that you can find lions, you can find leopards, you can find hyenas. So I think that's obviously simplified for, you know, the sake of the movie, but I do think that it's important for people to know that in reality, lions are not the kings of the savannah nor the jungle. They very much have to share and adapt, and so do the other carnivores. You know, they are active in the same place at different times, or they go to different areas of hunting. But yeah, that's something that I don't often see commented, but you know, the savannah is a lot richer than just lions and hyenas.
Yeah. Okay, so moving away from the movie now, how are lion populations doing in real life?
Badly, similar to a lot of other carnivores in Africa and carnivores all around the world. It's not the easiest animal type to live with, carnivores, not only because they pose a danger to ourselves, but because they can predate on our livestock. So, you know, just like in Europe, we have issues with lynx and wolves coming after sheep. So do in Africa. They have to, you know, coexist with herders that have goats, livestock, etc. And also they have the same problem that we have in Europe, and is the declining amount of available natural spaces.
Yeah.
And, you know, an animal as big as a lion needs a lot of space for it and for its prey to coexist and be able to survive on its own.
If people want to help out, is there anything they can do?
There's a lot of NGOs. I'm not in a position to recommend one over another.
Okay.
I'd say, you know, make sure that it's one that supports people on the ground or supports organizations that are working with the local communities,
mm-hmm.
To ensure that the money is going to a good place.
Okay.
And that is actually helping both the lions and the communities, because the only way that lions and other large carnivores are going to survive is to make sure that both the animals and the people living alongside them are both in a good state. Yeah.
Now, final question, very important, because, you know, we have this debate on occasion on Cinematic Animalia. The Suriname toad that births its babies out of its back, glorious or disgusting?
Glorious and disgusting.
Fence sitting nonsense. We need a definitive answer. There is no nuance here.
You know, if I have to choose one, it's going to be glorious.
Yeah.
I think nature is glorious even when it's disgusting.
Cool. Okay. Thank you very much, Maria, for coming on. It was fantastic to have somebody who knows about lions at this detailed a level. And for anybody who's interested, I did mention that Maria has worked as a consultant for a video game, the Wagadu Chronicles, correct?
The Wagadu Chronicles.
Sorry, I have a terrible record of pronunciation on this podcast. We will hopefully have Maria on in the future to talk about biology in video games from the perspective of a consultant, because as those of you who may have listened to our Deep Rock Galactic episode will know, everybody else on this podcast, except for me, is a massive gaming fan, so, yeah. Okay, but yeah, thank you very much for coming on.
Yeah, no worries, a pleasure. I hope you guys have fun.
Rock and stone! Rock and stone!
Okay, we're back. That was, yeah, fascinating, because like when you brought it up, Adam, and I was right in the camp with you, I'm not throwing you under the bus, I was like, yeah, why would Mufasa, you know, keep Scar around? But the fact yeah, a couple of like brothers will get kicked out of a lion pride and, you know, spend a couple of hard years out in the savannah joining up with some other lions and then take over another another pride. That is, yeah, I had no idea that's how the lion hierarchy worked.
As the classic saying goes, bros before lioness hoes.
Yeah,
that classic saying.
Yeah.
It's different in Kiswahili. Yeah.
That's true.
But yeah, as we briefly mentioned with Maria, this movie has one of the most fundamental misunderstandings of a trophic cascade I've ever seen in my life.
Atrocious. Yeah, so trophic cascades work, and the famous example here in North America anyway, is Yellowstone, where you have something either from the bottom of a food web or from the top of a food web exerting pressure one way or another, which will then radiate throughout the food web and affect other organisms at other levels of the food web. So in this case, you have the lions, which have, in the hyenas, the predators, which have apparently overpredated or driven off the herbivores. So because the herbivores are gone, now the things that the herbivores eat, plants, are going to be, they should be growing out of control, and there should be a lot more of them.
Yeah.
In a normal trophic cascade, in the movie, for whatever reason, the herbivores leave, and all the stuff they eat just dies. And you're left with a barren wasteland, which is fundamentally wrong.
So technically, when Simba comes back, he should be coming back to this lush, overgrown...
vibrant, verdant.
Vibrant, yeah.
Pretty much exactly what he just left.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Timon and Pumbaa in heaven because of all the bugs.
Yeah. There is, yeah, the implication made that that is a carnivore-free zone. So if anything, where Timon and Pumbaa live in the jungle should be decimated by an overpopulation of herbivores. The two landscapes should be switched around.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, what you should be having is what we have here in North America, where we have killed off most of the great wolves and driven them to the point of extinction, and now we're releasing hunting protections on them again.
Yeah.
And because of that, the deer populations, which are the herbivores, have exploded because they're not being predated, which then changes vegetation landscape because they're eating too much of some things, which have been either very limited in number, extirpated, or even driven to extinction potentially.
Yeah.
And other plants that grow like crazy.
Well, I think the point with the trophic cascade, right, is that it impacts so many different things. So I know with the wolves, like, they've even shown that it changes the course of rivers, right? Mm-hmm. You know, so it's the not just like, oh, the plants grow up. You know, it's affecting so many different things that we don't even think about.
Yeah.
And a lot of it is, so for instance, there's a common, and I think it's a fairly understandable misconception, that it's purely a case of wolves preying on deer, therefore there's less deer. The actual change in deer populations isn't as big as you'd imagine, but what it creates is spatial diversity, where you have changes in the distribution of where deer are, because all of a sudden they have to hang out in specific places where it's easier to hide and camouflage themselves. And that creates, diversity across a much larger spatial scale. And that creates, a massive difference in landscape as opposed to this massive homogenous, like, sameness. Which just...
Yeah, that's what they call the landscape of fear. Because there's cues from predators, be it smells, be it physical sights of the predators themselves. It basically keeps prey animals from spending too much time in one space.
Yeah.
And because the wolves are now back in Yellowstone, the elk, and I believe the deer as well, tend to move away from the areas they used to be in. And so now I think it's juniper bushes can then grow beyond their sapping phase and actually get to their full, like, reproductive stage because the deer aren't eating them as juveniles.
Yeah.
And the elk.
So is it possible that Scar and the hyenas have been so starved that they've just also eaten the vegetation?
Well, that would kill Scar and all the other lions.
Yeah, because lions are obligate carnivores, right? Like, they
obligate carnivores.
Yeah, but I mean, the hyenas are kind of, I don't know, halfway between a dog and a cat, so they can eat.
Yep.
Yeah, like dogs and wolves, they'll snack on berries and that sort of stuff.
I think this is a nice little point to insert that just because something is portrayed as either a herbivore or a meat eater, omnivore type, doesn't mean those animals don't necessarily go for one or the other when they have the chance.
Yeah.
So wolves will eat plant matter to try to supplement their diet, and then true, quote, herbivores have been noted to also eat protein when they have the chance. There was a record last week of a tortoise predating a baby bird and eating it.
Yeah.
The first time it's ever been recorded.
And not just like happening upon it, like stalking it.
Mm-hmm.
Actively going after it.
I love the idea of a tortoise stalking something.
I'm gonna get you. I'm gonna get you.
And we've mentioned before that giraffes will often consume bones as like a calcium supplement. And yeah, as Maria mentioned, fuck, hyenas really get fucked over in this movie, don't they?
They're so great.
They really do.
But they do have a long history in different parts of Africa of being associated with evil spirits and bad superstitions. So this was by no means something that wasn't present before this movie came along. But yeah, it really introduced the concept of hyenas being evil to Western audiences as well.
Yeah, I did see an article where after this movie came out, a hyena conservationist, jokingly, but like kind of winking a nod with the truth in it, said that this movie set back hyena conservation for years.
Yeah. Absolutely. And not quite as bad as Jaws was for sharks, but...
Yeah. And as Maria mentioned, they're gorgeous animals. I would really love to see one up close. I've never been to a zoo which has had a hyena population before. So.
I have been very fortunate enough to see them in the wild. And hunting. It was really cool.
Wait, you... Wow. So, oh, no, they were hunting.
Yeah.
Yep. Okay, good. Yep.
Gotcha. I was not hunting. Yeah. No, they were hunting a wildebeest. They had killed her baby the day before, and so they were wearing her down. So it was just really cool to see them working as a pack and tiring her out.
Were they doing any goose stepping?
They were.
I've always seen conservationists or other like ecologists, biologists talk about how lions are really just the bullies of the savannah, and it's not really fair, this majestic king of the jungle reputation they get.
Yeah.
And it always makes me think of this story I saw of this zoo that had a male lion and two lionesses, and the lionesses just relentlessly bullied this male because he was such a wimp. And like he never roared, he was always getting picked on by them, and so they started growing a main equivalent because they were dominant in the pride at that time.
Really?
And they said that one time he tried to roar and he just barfed.
Very Simba-esque in this film. That's another thing I love about this, because Simba just means lion in Swahili. So I like, you know, the thing of Rafiki just rocks up and he's like, Mufasa, what have you named your kid? Simba. It's like, really? Really? You're not gonna be a bit more creative here? Like,
this is my kid.
Yeah, this is my child.
He's
boy.
Like, what? My name is Friend. It works for me.
Yeah, exactly. Also, quick PSA, baboons are assholes, and there's no way Rafiki would have raised Simba as to be a potential predator. He would have taken him away and killed him.
Oh, yeah.
That happens a lot of the time. Yeah, there's been like some really cool footage of herbivores, like a wildebeest or African buffalo, trying to hunt down like a lion cub to just knock it off early.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I have a very funny baboon story. So the guy I stayed with in Africa, he said that one time he was napping in his car. This was in Tanzania. And so he was leaning back, like in his seat, just closed his eyes, but his window is down. This baboon, because they just wander around the streets a lot of the times. This baboon hopped up in the car window. And he was sleeping, so he didn't know what it was, so it scared him. So he instinctually just punched. So he punched this baboon right in the face.
And what did he like? Get his
face ripped off?
No, nope. I think it was just so stuck, like it just ran away because it was not expecting
Just like that, the image of that guy who punches the kangaroo and the kangaroo stands there like, "What the fuck?" Like,
yeah.
Like, do you know who I am?
Like, yeah.
I will drown you in this lake. Come get me. Yeah.
So just as a last tidbit before we hand over to Libby, I wanted to talk about the fact that lions were around in Europe really recently. Like they went extinct in Turkey, I think less than 200 years ago. And lions, the species that we find in Africa now, were present in much of Europe. Like we have stories about Alexander the Great having to deal with lions during his conquering of Southern Europe. And we obviously had cave lions further north as well. So they have a history, a very recent history of being present in Europe. And I have always felt there's a lot of hypocrisy about us, you know, criticizing people who have to live in the same vicinity of lions and often killing them off because they can be a threat to livestock or to people's lives, when we are obviously in no way, shape or form willing to have lions reintroduced back to Europe.
Absolutely not.
Yeah, because I mean, it is impractical, but I don't like the fact that we're just like, these Africans are, you know, killing these majestic creatures. And just like, yeah, but they have to live alongside them every day. We freak out. And when I say we, I mean Northern Europeans in this sense. We freak out every time a wolf comes within like 10 kilometers of a city.
The Swedes freak out over badgers, or wolverines, rather.
Wolverines. Wolverines, yeah. Same family. In fairness, the Swedes do a much better job with wolverines than Norwegians do. Norwegians.
Oh, yeah, I had it backwards then.
Yeah, Norwegians are much worse, yeah.
Ladies and gentlemen, tonight's winner, and still king of the cage, the Wolverine.
So today I wanted to talk about ripoffs versus homages. And I actually did not know this before Sam mentioned it. There is something called Kimba and the White Lion, which is was it originally a cartoon or a comic?
I think it's based off of a comic.
And then they made a cartoon.
Yeah,
I don't know. I just thought there's a movie.
It's a manga series.
That's what I thought, yeah. So it was a manga series set back in the 60s, 50s and 60s. It was widely popular. And one of those, kind of like Winnie the Pooh is for us, I think, in a lot of ways, is it just lived on for multiple decades. They made, you know, cartoons out of it. They made some movies out of it, I think.
Big cultural touchstone.
Yeah, big cultural touchstone over there.
In Japan, right?
Mm-hmm, in Japan. And so, as somebody probably rightfully pointed out when Lion King was made, they said, hey, this looks kind of familiar. And when they say familiar, they mean an exact replica.
A literal shot for shot, in some cases, copy.
Yeah. So I kind of wanted to talk about that, first of all. And, you know, it's interesting when you see cases lobbied against things being ripped off. In this case, to me, it seems very accurate. There is a lot of similarities. I will say when they say, like, oh, there's a shot of a zebra in the cartoon and a shot of a zebra in The Lion King, to me, I'm like, I mean, they're both set in Africa. Yeah. Like, that's kind of bound to happen. But when you do see things framed, like a lion figure in the clouds, and that is in The Lion King, it's kind of like, okay, I can see where that creatively was just absolutely ripped out and repurposed for financial gain.
Apparently Matthew Broderick actually took on the project because he thought he was playing Kimba.
Yeah, I think that's right.
He did, and he I think he made the mistake of advertising that
as Kimba.
Yeah, journalists picked up on it. Yeah, he said Kimba and the White Lion, and journalists were like, ooh, because at that point the writers had denied that they didn't know anything about Kimba, which is like someone saying, I don't know anything about Winnie the Pooh or Paddington Bear. It's like, even if you don't read it, like, you know what it is.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So they've gotten into trouble from that aspect of it. But I think for me, I kind of wanted to talk about the difference between, first of all, what an homage is. And then also, if you've heard this term, pastiche.
Mm-hmm.
Pastiche filmmaking. So I think people get homage and pastiche confused a lot, because homage is where you just reference it, right? And so you have shows or movies that sort of give like a little tribute, almost, is a better way of saying it.
Yeah.
Pastiche is a very specific style choice where it is deliberately copying. I don't want to use the word rip off, because they're intentionally ripping it off.
Mm-hmm.
They're deliberately copying another artist's work. And that can be an homage itself, sort of recreating something to give a fresh take on it, or, you know, like a fresh creative take on it, or bring it up into like a modernization. But it is very much one of those kind of shot for shot style things. So yeah. Quentin Tarantino is very famous for pastiche movies. You know, you have movies like Inglourious Basterds, which the title is a straight copy of an old World War II film. And the plot for Inglourious Basterds is just the plot for Dirty Dozen, you know, and he just took it out and did that very intentionally. And he says that. He says, I copy everything. So I think that for me, especially with The Lion King, if they had just said that, it would have been a lot better. Mm-hmm. So if they had said, yes, Lion King is a pastiche of Kimba the White Lion, to me that works. You know, it's like paying an homage to the creator of Kimba and the White Lion, and honoring that as this cultural touchstone that it is for Japanese people. And you know, modernizing or westernizing it, I should say, not modernizing it. But they didn't do that. They just denied. And that's what makes it a ripoff.
Disney famously does this a lot with all these either other people's properties or just a folk tale or folklore, like Cinderella, like Mulan is based off of an old Chinese story. And just like, we made this movie. It's like, this is a story that already exists, and now you're making a ton of money off of it without crediting or giving any kind of attribution or payment to the original creator.
It is interesting, though. The creator thought it was a big honor. Like, he kind of recognized, I think, deep down, but he sided with Disney. And said, oh no, like they're two different things. And if there are references, I'm honored that they referenced me. And so they never sued for copyright infringement at all.
It's been an honor, sir. Who are you talking to? Jesus Christ, the honor was all mine.
Oh, no.
So do we feel bad for the monsters? I feel bad for the hyenas. They got screwed over.
Yeah.
They got dicked over, but then, you know, they get to come back and kill Scar, so that's great.
Yeah.
But you kind of feel a little bad for Scar.
Excuse me.
Just being absolutely poised as the problem child since day one.
Yeah.
Being named Trash.
This is my son, Trash.
Yeah.
See, I think this is just the tragic story of toxic masculinity of the movie, because I'm guessing Mufasa's dad was a big burly lion. Mufasa's a big burly lion. And you have Scar, who's a bit more, you know, slim, maybe a bit more effeminate in his mannerisms, very flamboyant. And then these maybe homophobic and toxic masculinity lions are like, hey, Scar, you're weird. We don't like you. So we're going to make you the scapegoat for everything. And you're just the trash brother. We're going to make you live in this little cave off the side behind the rock, which is super weird.
Yes. And as Maria said, like, if this is, you know, a normal lion situation, there's no need for Scar to be pissed off because there's only two male lions, which means he's getting his fair share of lion...
Can You Feel the
Lioness
Love Tonight?
Lioness Hose.
Lioness Hose, yeah.
He's getting plenty of Can You Feel the Love Tonight? Yeah. Exactly. Elton John's.
Yeah.
Ooh, bit of trivia there. I remember Elton John was responsible for a large part of the soundtrack of this movie, and the story of him writing down or seeing the line, "When I was a young warthog," and thinking, "What am I doing with my life?" The Rocket Man himself.
Okay, would we recommend this movie?
100%.
Yes.
Yeah, of course.
Don't ever watch the remake, but yes, I would recommend this one.
That one doesn't even exist. Don't worry about it.
Yeah.
I think it's fine for kids.
Of the Disney sequels, like, this one has good sequels.
Yeah.
They're not perfect, but, you know, they're much better than some of the other ones I've seen.
They are. I remember the Aladdin sequels being really fun.
Yeah, the Aladdin sequel was good.
Oh, Prince of Thieves? That was fantastic. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
I really enjoyed
that. There's a third one, too, I think, that I really enjoyed. I don't remember seeing that when I was a little kid, but when we had it on VHS, kids. Used to be on tape.
Yeah, Lion King. Yeah. That's a really good song that I still like to this day called Yupendi. Mm. It's a lot of fun.
Is that the...
Rafiki sings it.
Okay.
She was notoriously robbed of a song in the first movie.
Yeah, so at will be, after this week, the bright, sunny, apparently barren plains of Africa, savanna of Africa, will be going deep underground to the North American cave system with The Descent. A really, really fun, I think,
very
underrated
excited.
Movie.
Very excited about this movie.
I haven't seen this before, so yeah, looking forward to it.
Ooh.
I think you're going to enjoy
Definitely
it.
Definitely don't watch it with Eric in the room.
Don't, yeah.
It is absolutely horrifying.
There's a lot going on there.
My wife loves horror films, so yeah.
Okay.
Sure, fantastic. Bit of a trigger warning for next week. If anybody has claustrophobia, this movie may get you. But I still highly recommend it. So yeah, The Descent, that'll be next week. And remember, as we say at the end of every episode, the monsters aren't real, but the science is.
And hyenas are lovely.
Yeah. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Mufasa, Mufasa, Mufasa! Mufasa!
We are all connected in the great circle of life. Walt Disney Pictures presents its all-new 30-second full-length animated motion picture, The Lion King.